So in 2010, Apple came out with iPhone 4. And iPhone 4, if you can remember that far back, had a brand new feature. And Apple, we know Apple, whether you like them or not, are usually one of those companies that are on the cutting edge of culture and figuring out where culture is at and what culture wants. And so right in that moment, when they came out with that cell phone, the big new feature for iPhone 4 from the previous one was the front-facing camera, which now, subsequently, every smartphone that you get, and if you have a tablet or whatever, they all have front-facing cameras. Because Apple, in that moment, realized that they were on the verge, culture was on the verge of shifting into a new way of taking pictures. It was the, not the advent, not the beginning, but the tidal wave, as we just sung about, of the selfie. It was the idea, and this wasn't the first time people took selfies. People have been taking selfies for years and years and years in different ways. But all of a sudden, they realized that people wanted to take pictures of themselves. And I don't know if you remember this, but to do that, you used to have to turn a camera around, and you didn't know what the picture was going to look like, and you just take it, and then you get home, and you go, I'm not even in the picture. And everybody wanted these pictures, and sometimes you're in it, and sometimes you're not. And so they came up with this great idea. We're going to make a camera that faces you so that you can look at yourself while you take a picture of you. And since then, in 2010, over different platforms and social media, there have been tens of millions of pictures that people have taken of themselves with the hashtag selfie. And so I thought, because I've never done this before, I've taken selfies before, but I've never taken a selfie while I'm preaching, I thought today that I would get a good selfie. So the deal with this selfie, the trick to it is you have to kind of find flattering angle, get your good side. Just tough for me. Just smile. And get a really good one. And arm's length out. And make sure, which is my good side? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Doesn't matter. Okay, here we go. Oh, that's awesome. There we go. Okay, we all take these selfies. And then later I'll post that. And then all my supportive friends and families will go, yeah, like. Great selfie. You look so good. And people go, oh, man, handsome and all that kind of stuff. You can comment whatever you want. But this is what we do with selfies. And really, in a lot of ways, we become a selfie culture. And what I want to talk to you about today and through this series is the idea that if your primary perspective on life is an arm length away and with the camera pointing towards you, there's a good chance you're going to miss out on the richness and beauty of life. Do you know there's even a celebrity, and I don't want to, you know, bash anybody or name call or anything, so I won't mention names. But Kim Kardashian, she actually made a book, an entire book of selfies, like hundreds of pages of just selfies. And she called it, nobody got it, okay, selfish. She called it selfish. Right? And I'm not here really, I'm talking about this in a metaphoric sense. You know, it's not so much just about taking the selfie pictures, but it's about that perspective of if our lives always have the camera pointed at ourselves and our perspective is just one arm's length away, it's going to be so damaging to our relationships and how we see the world and how we experience the world and how we interact with other people around us. And so the question I want to ask you today is, when you look back, do you want your life to look more like a book of selfies or more like an album of family and friends? Do you want to have a collection of memories and experiences and relationships that are all about yourself? And you look back and say, man, I could put a book of selfies together just like that. Or do you want to look back on your life and say, my memories, my experiences, my life is full of rich, deep, powerful relationships with other people? And selfishness is probably the most powerful negative influencer in our relationships. One of those things that even from the inside out kills the relationships around us. And so I want to ask the question for some of us, for many of us, as we live in this selfie culture where the camera always seems to be pointed at me, is it maybe time that we turn the camera back around? Is it maybe time that we spend less time thinking about ourselves, talking about ourselves, focusing on ourselves, and instead turning our perspective back out to the world around us and considering the needs of other people and investing in relationships as we do that? And so as we start this, I'm not here to make you feel bad or guilty or to heap up a whole bunch of stuff on a bunch of selfish people. Except I do want to kind of play on our selfishness a little bit. I want to use that because for so many of us, and I think all of us, we have this aspect of selfishness within us somewhere, and it crops up in different ways for different people and in different times and different relationships. But it's an interesting thing when we think about selfishness, because the root of that, the reason why we even pursue being selfish, whether we like it or not, we often pursue it, is because we believe, you know, selfishness is kind of this thinking that I'm more important than other people, or I focus on myself more than I focus on other people, because we believe that's going to lead to something better for us. That's why it's selfish. This is going to bring me, myself, something better than I have now, a better kind of life, a better experience, better relationships, whatever it is. That's what selfishness is. I want to get better. I want to do better. I want to feel better. The ironic thing is that the more we pursue selfishness, getting more for ourselves, the less we actually experience a better kind of life. Jesus, he taught this. He said, whoever wants to be first, and he was talking because even Jesus' followers, his closest friends, his disciples, as they walked around with him, they started arguing one day about who's the best. You know, they looked at this little posse that Jesus had and said, who's number one? I want to be number one. I want to be at the right hand or the left hand. I want to be kind of the power people in Jesus' little circle and Jesus' movement. And Jesus looked at them and said, whoever wants to be first must be last and servant to all. If you really want to be first in God's economy, if you want to know what it's like to really experience the best in life, to really be at the top of your game, to be at the top of life, if you want to be the first, you need to learn to be last, to put yourself behind other people. And he goes on and he says, and you need to learn to be servant or a slave to all. And you go, man, that's so counterintuitive, because I felt like if I'm going to get something, then I need to make sure that I get that I put myself first, that I make sure that I'm at the top of the list, or I'm going to go without. And Jesus counterintuitively and counterculturally came and said, actually, if you want to be first in God's economy, you need to be last. And you need to become servant or a slave to all. You need to focus on lifting other people up instead of lifting yourself up, encouraging other people to go win and experience the fullness of life instead of always trying to make yourself experience that kind of life. And what's so powerful is that Jesus not only taught other people that, because that's easy. It's easy to teach other people, hey, you should be less selfish and more selfless and lift other people up and encourage other people. But his entire life exemplified it, showed it. There's a powerful poem about Jesus in Philippians chapter 2. It says that even though he was God himself, did not consider that identity as something to be grasped or to be held on to. So you would think, many of us would think, if God stormed into this world, what should he look like? Well, he should be able to tell everybody exactly what to do, and he should exert all of his power. He should make sure that everybody makes him feel good and all that kind of stuff. And Jesus came in and he served other people. He humbled himself. He became the last. Even his disciples, there was this moment where he started washing their feet, and in the ancient Middle Eastern culture, this was an important job to do, but one that only servants or slaves would ever do. Kind of the bottom rung of people in the household would be the ones to wash feet. And Jesus, just before his arrest and his death, he took the towel and he took the form of a servant. He took the posture of a servant and he went to wash his disciples' feet. One of them says, Jesus, I should be washing your feet, not the other way around. This is, and Jesus said, stop. You need me to do this, and I need to serve you. And he showed him that the most powerful way to love other people is to place them first, to have this view of them before me, to place others' importance ahead of your own, and to be a real, true servant in the most practical ways that you could imagine for other people. And you think if God himself would come, and not only teach that, but embody it, he would do it. How important would it be for us to grasp this? And to take that camera, which for many of us, if we're honest, for all of us in our lives, where that camera's pointed at me, this is where I want to be and what I want to do and what I should deserve and the kind of life I should pursue. And to stop and say, maybe there's just too much of my own focus on myself. To point that camera back out and find those people who need our help, who need our encouragement, who need to be lifted up in different ways, and there to find the life that Jesus not only taught us, but also showed us in the ways that he served all of us. Ultimately, in his death on the cross, he humbled himself. He became obedient to death, even death on a cross, that he would go that low to experience that kind of shame to show people what real true love looks like, what real true humility looks like. If God could humble himself to this, what will we who follow Jesus do in response to that kind of love? So today we're going to take the first step and simply try to identify where there is selfishness in our lives. And so if you have a Bible with you and you want to turn to James chapter 3, James is a relatively small book, pretty close to the end of the New Testament, the end of the Bible. And if you don't have a Bible, the words will be on the screen behind me. But James is a book written to a whole bunch of Christians in a whole bunch of different places. It's probably circulated to a number of different communities, and it is one of our most practical books in terms of how do we live out the Christian faith? How do we practically live out the wisdom that God has given us in just the most real terms that we could think about and imagine? And James is so good at just writing how it is and saying that this is how it could look and should look in your life if you want to follow Jesus. Let's not pull any punches. Let's not talk about faith. And kind of this abstract, he gets right down to it and says, here's faith and here's your life and here's what it looks like if you put the two together and you live out your faith. And over the next few weeks, we're going to start at the end of chapter 3 in James and work through chapter 4 of James, this section where he's talking about our relationships and an aspect of humility that brings real rich, powerful relationship to fruition in our lives. And today, sandwiched in there, we're going to see some really good examples of how it looks in our relationships if we humble ourselves. And then in the middle, what it looks like when we let selfishness lead the way in our lives, when we let our concern for ourselves overshadow our concern for other people, and how that is damaging to the relationships around us. So this is James chapter 3. I'm going to start reading in verse 13, which says this. Who is wise and understanding among you? Who's a good example? Who's practically living out their faith in very real ways that is actually benefiting them and the people around them? Who could we draw from that we could say, this would be a good example for me to follow in my life and it would be beneficial? By his good conduct, let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. So let's start here. We're going to find some good role models, find the kind of person that we want to be like, the kind of person that we want to emulate. And here's what I think this verse says if I was going to summarize it. Your relational capacity is driven by a lifestyle produced by hard work done with a gentle attitude. Your relational capacity. So if you want to be good at relationships, if you want to be surrounded by healthy relationships, do you want to be invested in other people and have these good interactions that are good for everybody involved? Your capacity to do that will be driven by a lifestyle that's produced by two things, hard work and a gentle attitude. That's what we see in that verse. It says, you know, who's wise and understanding among you? Who does this well? By one, his good conduct, the things that he actually does. Those things are sometimes hard work. And let him show his works in the meekness of wisdom. So with a gentle attitude. Now, many of us, when it comes to trying to put together good relationships and do things for others and humble ourselves, we might find that we do one of these things really well and one of them not so well. Some of us, we might be really good at doing the hard work of being there for people in terms of doing practical things that help other people or having good deeds. But when it comes to the attitude, that gentle, humble attitude, we just don't have it. This is people who, they might show up and do some work but complain about it. They might do something nice for you but talk about you behind your back. They might do something that's good except with this bitter attitude of, I have to do it, and, you know, I wish I didn't have to be here and all this kind of stuff. And you know how this works. Somebody does something really nice for you but in a bad attitude, it really ruins the whole gift of that good deed. You know, well, if you're going to complain and if you don't really want to be here and if you didn't really want to do this, then maybe you just shouldn't have done it. It ruins the whole effect. And then we have other people who have this great gentle attitude but have a hard time getting their act in gear and actually doing something, working out their attitude or their intentions for other people. And so some of us, you know, oh, well, we need to help so-and-so, or, you know, I should invest more time in my relationship over here. So-and-so is such a wonderful person. I wish I was there, but we don't follow through with the hard work. And what James, he starts out by saying, who's wise among us? Who really understands this is people who get it, that really investing in relationships has two components. Really being a humble person has two components. One is it's going to take some hard work. You need to do actions. You need to act out on your intentions, and two, you need to do it with a gentle attitude, with this attitude that brings peace to other people's lives. It's the word there, the meekness of wisdom. That's that humble, peaceable attitude that says, I'm here for somebody else. I'm not here for me. I'm not here to just lift myself up, but I am going to prop other people up. Give them the spotlight. Give them the attention. Give them what they need. And that's the wise thing to do. So the equation goes like this. Good deeds plus good attitude equals good relationships. Seems simple enough, doesn't it? Take some good deeds, do it with a good attitude, you find you'll have good relationships. We go, wow, that's common sense, isn't it? It's absolutely common sense. Except if you're not in a good mood, it gets really hard. Right? If you wake up and everything's good in your day and you're in a good mood and the sun is shining and you have everything you need, it's not always hard to do good deeds and have a good attitude and find that people around you love it and you have good relationships. But we know that life gets in the way. You get tired. You get hungry. And if you get tired and hungry at the same time, this is really, really hard. But if things encroach and you get tired and other things, and then there's stuff that I have to do for me and I can't do it for somebody else because if I don't look out for myself first, and all of a sudden we find that our relationships suffer because it's not always easy to do good deeds with a good attitude and to find that we have good relationships. But that's what James is trying to tell us here. You need to focus on this. Time to turn the camera around, do some good things for other people with a good attitude and find that you have good relationships. It seems simple, but here's what gets in the way, our selfishness. Verse 14, that's huge. Okay, well, that's easy. Good attitude, good deeds, good relationships. But if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your hearts, do not boast and be false to the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above, but is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. Could we get a little stronger than that? Bitter jealousy is an attitude of zeal or rivalry. It's trying to compete with other people. Selfish ambition, it's very much the same kind of thing. These are two terms for just about the same kind of attitude. Selfish ambition is a contentious spirit. It's someone who's trying to promote themselves at the expense of others. It speaks of people who are trying to get things done or achieve certain things, regardless of the effect of what I'm doing on somebody else. That's selfish ambition. I'm trying to prop myself up. And if other people suffer as a result, then that's what has to happen because I am most important because I need to make sure that I get what I need. And so what he's talking about is here's a relationship killer is when we get competitive about our relationships, when we're trying to get ahead of other people instead of trying to bring other people with us or lift up others ahead of us. And he goes on to say, this is so strong. He uses three terms. This is not wisdom that comes from above. In other words, this is not what God says is good for your life and profitable for your life. This is, I know it's counterintuitive to many of us who, there's this selfishness in us that says, I need to look out for myself. He says, this is not what God is telling you is good for your life. Wise people, that is people who are good at life, practically speaking, make good decisions and follow through on them, will not live this way because it's earthly. That means it's lowly. This is a word in Greek that it could mean in another context to grovel or to beg. Like this is a way of life that's beneath you. This is as low as you can go. It's unspiritual. Literally means it's unsoulful. There's nothing deep about this. We might say that this kind of living is really superficial. There's nothing that really attaches to your soul and benefits your life or other people's soul. This is something that, if you live this selfish, competitive way, it's just everything in your life is going to be surface. It's unspiritual. It means it's not going to hit you or grow you or benefit you deep down in the most core part of your identity, your soul. You're living too superficially. Another way of saying this would be it's animal. It's just, there's nothing humanizing about it. It's living like you're an animal, like you're just out there for yourself and you have no regard for other human beings and how this affects them and how it affects your relationship with them. And then finally, he says, demonic. The roots of this kind of living, the roots of selfishness, jealousy, competitiveness in your relationship, it doesn't come from God. It comes from a demonic source. It comes from an evil source in your life. This is in no way going to be good for you. And I think he's laying this on thick with these strong words and with this list of strong words to try and tell you, I know that it, It seems like it's going to feel good if you put yourself first, and it seems like you're going to get ahead in life if you are your number one priority and you live that way. But understand that this is beneath you, it's not good for your soul, and it comes from an evil place that's going to tear you apart and tear other people's apart. And you say, yeah, but it's so much easier to live selfishly. Yeah, it's easy to live selfishly for a time, but it's going to lead you to disaster. That's why he says this in verse 16. This is a great summary of what he's just said in these two verses. For where jealousy and selfish ambition exists, there will be disorder and every vile practice. Okay, just get your head around this. For where there's jealousy and selfish ambition, or in other words, where you live selfishly, where you let your selfishness lead your actions and your attitude, then he says, there will be, not there might be, or you run the risk of, or there's a danger of, or if you're not careful, it could turn into, but there will be. So this, what he's about to say is, this is the natural way and conclusion of living a selfish life. This is the natural consequences of being selfish. There will be disorder and every evil practice. So this is my summary of that. This is what I hope you take away and remember of today. Whenever selfishness leads, drama follows. Have you seen that in your life? Have you seen that in the lives of people around you? When he says disorder, there's this disorder. It means chaos in your life. And that's why the term that we use often now in our relationships is drama. You know those people that drama seems to follow them, that wherever they go, whatever relationships they have, there's just drama everywhere. Whenever selfishness leads, drama follows. That's what James is saying. If you let your selfishness chart the course of your relationships, then drama will follow. Do you need evidence of this? Do you need me to prove it to you? Watch reality TV. I'm not necessarily recommending this or saying that I've ever seen it, but watch The Bachelor. Stick a whole bunch of women in a house and one guy and say to them, compete for one relationship. Or Bachelorette, same deal. Stick a whole bunch of guys in a room and then one woman and guys compete for one relationship and see what happens. And guess what happens? Drama. That's why it's good TV. That's why they've been on for year after year after year, because we love to see drama. But I want to tell you this. You don't want your life to look like an episode of The Bachelor. But where selfishness leads, drama follows. Think of it for a second. This is so damaging for us. It's damaging for our relationships, but it's also damaging for your own self-esteem. When you get into the mindset that you have to compete with everybody else in order to feel good or to feel like you're actually getting ahead, not only is it going to slowly, sometimes quickly, kill the relationships you have with those other people, but it will kill your own self-esteem. Here's why. When we get in this competitive nature, this selfish ambition, which says, I need to be better than someone else, it means that if I am not better than you, then I can't feel successful. It's not just, well, I need some money and I need some wealth. It's I need to be wealthier than the next person. It's not just I need to be pretty. It's I can't feel pretty unless I'm more pretty than the other girl. It's not just I need good grades. It's I need good grades and I need to get just slightly better grades than my friends or the other people in my class. There's this competitive nature that comes inside of us that says to really feel like I'm worth something, I need to compete with other people and I need to get ahead of them. And that will kill your self-esteem, because you will always, always find someone who's a little better looking and who has a little bit more money and whose kids and family look a little bit better than yours, at least on the outside, and who have a better job title and who get better grades. There's always someone who's got us. And so in the meanwhile, while we chase that dream of being better, it kills us inside. So we never feel like we get there. And along the way, it kills our relationship with other people, because instead of saying, I want you to be the best that you can be, and I want you to be the best you can be, and I want to help you do the best that you can do, and I want to make sure that you flourish and that you get what you need, instead we're saying, yeah, I don't mind if you do okay, but a little less okay than me. And all of a sudden, our relationships are competitions, and we would rather see people just go down a peg As long as we're up a bit, and maybe not all the way down. You know, we don't. I just want you to crash and burn, but I want you to be just a little lower than where I'm at. Whenever selfishness leads, drama follows. It's good TV, but you don't want your life and your relationships to look like an episode of The Bachelor or The Bachelorette, filled with drama everywhere that you go. When we live in competition with one another, we will destroy both our self-esteem and our relationships with other people. So I want to take a couple of seconds. How would you know this is happening in your life? Because I know none of us set out on the day. We don't say, today I'm going to go and live a selfish lifestyle. Most of us don't do that. We don't wake up and say, I'm going to push a whole bunch of people down so that I can feel like I've been raised up today. Most of us in this room, that's not where we're at. But I want you to be able to take an inventory of your life and to look around and say, where are there places where maybe my selfishness, my selfish ambition is rising up in my heart and costing me in different ways in my relationship? So let's talk about selfish people for a second. How would you find one? And you'll notice in this is the scary thing about this when we do this list, you're probably going to go, oh, I know someone like that. That's your selfish ambition, right? So be careful of that, because you're going to go, oh, yeah, my wife right now, she's, oh. Okay, that's selfish ambition. And if you compete in your marriage, you're going to have a rough go in your marriage, right? So we're not going to do that. You're just going to look at this, and I know we could see people in our lives, and probably some of us, we know people who are extreme in some of these areas, and maybe that helps you understand the principle, but we want to focus on ourselves and say, where do I see this in my own life? Selfish people, number one, are contentious. They're always fighting. There's always something wrong. There's always something to fight about and argue about. It's never just peaceful and easy, and yes, I'll accept this, and that's fine. They always find something that they can argue about, fight about. Things are just never okay. They are attention seekers. They're the kind of people that want to be in the spotlight, that want everybody looking at them, that always want to be acknowledged for what they do, that always want to be praised, that always need people to notice. They are hypocritical. What I mean by that is they are phony or two-faced. What they say in private is not who they are in public. What they do in public doesn't match up with who they are in private or behind the scenes. They are discontent. They are people who feel like, I never have enough and I can't get there. And again, that comes from that cycle of saying, once we get to a certain level, all of a sudden we meet someone who's gone to the next level. I got to a certain level with my income, but then I find that there's somebody who makes more money. I finally got a grip on thinking that, you know, I wasn't half bad looking. And then I looked at the selfie that I took before and I realized, no, then I found somebody who's better looking. And all of a sudden, you know, I don't know if I'm good looking anymore. I finally got a job title. And then I found one of my friends got promoted. They got something better. I'm never content. I can never find what I need and feel like I have everything that I need. They're easily offended. You ever had someone in your family or in your friend circle where you just know you're always walking on eggshells because even the most innocent comment they can misconstrue and take offense, and how dare you say that about me, and how you dare, and you must be against me, and I can't believe they would say that and do that. Selfish people, they're looking at themselves so much, they're always feeling attacked. They're closed-minded. They don't want to consider what other people have to say. They always think they're right. They think that their opinion is always the right way, and they're not open to criticism. They're not open to other people's opinion. And then they're unfair. Usually what it means is they want to be treated one way and be able to treat other people another way. What they think they should be receiving is different than what they should be giving. And all of these words come from a range of meaning, from those words that we talked about that are in this passage, that selfish ambition or bitter jealousy. That's what this means. And so I got a question for you. Where in your life do you see some of these things coming out? Again, most of us, I'm sure you could find someone, you probably know someone who, you know, there's so much drama in their lives, and you look at that list and you say, man, they are the king of drama. They are a drama queen. This is it too. But where in your life is there drama? And I want today, just as an application, I want you to think about where in your life is there drama. And I'm not saying every bit of drama in your life is your fault. It's caused by you. That's not true. But when you look at drama in your life, when you look at, I mean, maybe it's in your marriage right now, you just feel like you're fighting all the time. Maybe it's with your kids, you can't get it together. Maybe it's with your housemates or a friend circle. Maybe there's one relationship in your life that is just always on the rocks, or right now seems to be on the rocks. To look at that point of drama and to ask yourself this, where on my part has selfishness contributed to that? I'm not saying it's all your fault, but there's very little you can do about someone else's selfishness, someone else's actions. There is a whole lot that we can do about our own. And when we stop and say, hey, you know what? There's this relationship and it's just filled with drama right now. It's filled with chaos. It's filled with disorder. But maybe there's things that I'm doing that are contributing to it. And what you're going to find out is you're going to find aspects of your own attitude that are selfish, which have driven you to be a whole bunch of these things, contentious and seeking attention or being discontent, hypocritical, easily offended, closed-minded, unfair, and all of a sudden you look and go, you know what? I think in this relationship there's been aspects where I've been in it for me, and I've been so worried about how this relationship benefits me and why this person hasn't treated me a certain way and why I'm not getting what I think I deserve, and all of a sudden this is going to be true. You go, hey, my life is becoming an episode of The Bachelor, and maybe it's because I feel like I have to compete with everybody else to prop myself up instead of trying to allow others to flourish around me. And maybe there you'll realize there's places where the principle is true. Whenever you let selfishness lead, drama will follow. And there might even be spaces in your life where you're going, I don't know why there's so much drama here. And then you go back and examine a little bit and say, you know what? I'm pretty selfish. Or in this relationship, I'm really allowing selfishness to dictate my attitude or my actions. And there's no way to move forward until we identify these things. So again, I'm not here to heap guilt on you, but to allow you to see that wisdom, where things can go, where things can be so much better. But first, we need to identify and root out some of the problems that are in us and realize, why am I in the place that I am? And perhaps there's spots in your life where you need to identify selfish attitudes and the drama that they are bringing into your life and your relationship. To look at that list and not say, oh yeah, I know people like that. But to look at that list and say, man, I can be a contentious person. Man, why is it that I have to fight about that? Why is it that this is so important to me and I can't give this up? Why is it that I'm so closed-minded? And to realize that maybe the reason for many of those things is because we are protecting ourselves selfishly at the expense of being there for other people. Let's move on. Just today, as we kind of bring this first circle, again, I told you this was a sandwich. We started by talking about what wise people look like in the relational sphere, and then we looked just now at identifying what it looks like when things go wrong and the selfishness that leads to drama. Now we come back to wisdom and what that looks like. Verse 17 says, but the wisdom from above, remember what we just looked at was wisdom that's not from above, wisdom that is earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. Now we go the other way. But the wisdom that is from above, what would it look like in your life? It is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. In other words, if you want to know if you're getting this in your life, go ahead and look at the fruit, because this list is the opposite of the other list. What would it look like if you really understood what it looked like to live humbly with other people and to put them first? Well, you'd see a purity in your life, an integrity, that who you said you were and what you did were the same thing. It would be peaceable or peaceful. You'd be gentle, open to reason, open to talking things through with people, full of mercy and good fruits. Impartial means you'd be fair with how you treat yourself and other people. And you would be sincere, not hypocritical, but what you wanted, what you did and said, all matched up. Let me ask you this. Doesn't that sound like a good way to live? Doesn't that sound so much better than always having drama follow you around? Don't you want to be this kind of person that experienced relational peace around you? Doesn't it seem like that's so much less hassle, so much less fighting, so much less, you know, always having to try harder, harder, harder to get through some kind of problem, but instead to say, well, this is what my life looked like. So verse 18 is so important. This is where we're going to go with the rest of this series. We're going to try and be as practical as we can. Verse 18, it says, and a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. The other week, you know, it's springtime, and I went out to the backyard, and I realized we have a couple of really ugly bald patches in our lawn. I don't know if any of you have that. Just really nasty. You know, some places where the grass is super full and green and wonderful, and then other places where it's just it's just barren and dry and there's nothing there. And so we went out and we bought some grass seed and we got some soil. We laid the soil down and we put the grass seed in it and we started watering and all this kind of stuff. And some of you, this is going to really surprise you. Some of you, you'd never think this, but it's been, you know, a week and a half now. And again, this is surprising, but guess what started to happen? Guess what's starting to come up through the soil? Grass. Grass is growing because we planted grass. Here's what James is saying to you. What you plant, what you water, is what's going to bloom, what's going to come into your life. If you're planting selfishness, you will be growing disorder and chaos. If you plant peace, then what's going to grow in your life is peace. Isn't that a beautiful thing? And here's what happens in gardening. If you've done some gardening, then you know this. When you plant a seed, if you start all the way from a seed, you put it in the ground, you cover it up with the soil, you start watering it. Usually what happens is within a day, you know what it looks like? Big hunk of dirt. Couple of days, dirt. You know what you do? You go out there on a hot day like today, and you continue to water it and take care of it and make sure that the soil has nutrients, and then water it and water it and water it. And eventually what happens is that which was a little seed that looked like nothing, that you covered up and it didn't look like there was any productivity or anything there, all of a sudden flowers up and blossoms. And if you plant the right things, look beautiful and bring beauty to your life. What James is saying is, that's what it's like in relationships. Each and every day, you have an opportunity to plant seeds. You can plant selfishness. And it might not look like on that moment, in that day, all of a sudden a huge disaster comes up. And you can plant peace. You can plant these unselfish, humble, relational things. And it might not look like it makes a big difference right in the moment, right on that day. It might take weeks and months and even years. But eventually, if you continue to plant peace, beautiful flowers of relationship will blossom in your life. Day after day, planting and watering and watering and waiting and watching for what's going to come up in your life. But understand this, whenever selfishness leads, whenever you plant selfishness, eventually drama will follow. Take a look this week. Where is there drama in your life? Where is there a weed that has grown up and you said, I might have planted that, but it's time to rip it out. And now in its place, I want to start planting seeds of righteousness, seeds of peace, seeds of gentleness, seeds of open-mindedness and mercy, so that one day there will be a harvest of righteousness, of peace in our lives. Just the same way that Jesus, day in and day out, throughout his entire life as he served people, planted those seeds of peace and righteousness of relationship. So to remind me, I'm going to take another picture, but I'm going to turn my camera around this time. And this is my reminder. You can do this too if you want to. But instead of taking a selfie, I'm going to take a picture of all of you and remind myself that the reason I'm up here is to love and to serve you, and that you guys are the reason why I'm here and I love you. So big smiles. Everybody ready? You're going to be on Twitter later today? That is awesome. Thank you. I encourage you this week to take your camera, turn it around, look at the people around you that you are here to serve and to love and to care for, and to go out with good intentions, good attitude, and do good conduct, and there to plant seeds for good relationships. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we love you and we thank you that you've shown us what it looks like to really love people, that you've shown us what it looks like to be humble. And even though you are God, that you'd be willing to send your son, that Jesus would be willing to come and to empty himself for our sake. That is truly humbling. God, would you help us to do the same? I pray for people today who are struggling with very real drama in their lives, and not always caused by us, but God, in those moments where it is, would you help us to root out selfishness and to plant peace, to plant gentleness, to plant open-mindedness, to plant those things that will grow up in us and blossom into really good, powerful relationships, and that those relationships would remind us of you and your love for us. God, we love you so much. Thank you for showing us what real love is. We pray in the powerful name of Jesus Christ. Amen.